Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Walker Wildman, Vice President of Operations, and now Steve Jordahl, reporter for OneNewsNow.com. Steve,
we always say this,
good morning slash good afternoon. We do have listeners in the eastern part of the country.
I think that struck me as an idea the very first time I was on this show. I thought, you know what? We say good morning, but it's noon.
In some places.
It's morning when we get started.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
As they say.
That was deep.
I hope you've had a good day at work, you in Prague.
Right. As you're going home.
On the AFA app, which you can do.
That's true.
We're getting increasing
numbers of people who listen to American Family Radio, this show and other great programming on the American Family Radio via the app. You just go to the app store. That's for Apple products. Where do you go to get apps for, what's the other kind of?
Android?
Android phones. Is it the App Store as well?
Google Play, I think.
Google Play? Okay.
Yep, that's right.
So you can get the...
We have it for both.
Mm-hmm. So you can go to both of those to get the AFR
free.
App. It is free, and you can get podcasts and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, it is boundless fun and a lot of information.
Boundless. Wow.
Yeah, the app's also on... We have a couple television versions. We have on the Roku device, Apple TV devices. So if you have one of those in your house, you can download the app there.
And you can probably even go to Facebook and to the Today's Issues page and watch archived versions of Today's Issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can
watch
the show there,
right,
too.
If you've missed a program and you just have to see us actually doing it on video.
Because sometimes there's just nothing else to do. I mean, you get enough of Super Bowls and...
We're pretty good.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
I could see why people want to watch us.
I can't.
Absolutely. And in fact, rather watch us than, to your point, Steve, past Super Bowl.
Easy. I bet our ratings are better.
I think they are.
Now you are sounding like your dad. All right, Steve, let's get to the news.
One of those stellar pieces of information you might not hear anywhere else. This is coming across AP, and it has come across in the last hour or so. Facebook has sanctioned, put Benjamin Netanyahu in Facebook jail.
The prime minister of Israel.
They docked his account. They docked his account for 24 hours because someone from his staff, he's not sure who, put up on the page, they called on all voters to prevent the establishment of a government. Remember, there's elections coming up here this week.
He's in political danger.
He is. So they have called on voters to prevent the establishment of a government composed of Arabs who want to destroy us all, women, children, and men. Now,
doesn't leave much out.
No, but Facebook hires college graduates, right, to come in and be their... censors, the people who look at posts, whether it can stay or not. These people have graduated. I know Facebook's in Menlo Park. A lot of these people graduated from Berkeley or similar. They probably don't know that what he said is true.
Right. Mm. So he's in Facebook jail?
He's in Facebook jail.
Wow.
You know, if you want to talk about foreign election meddling, it seems like a lot of countries are very interested in who wins that election. And not that that's a wrong thing. I mean, the U.S., President Trump is probably very supportive of Netanyahu. So there's nothing wrong with it. But, you know, the left got all upset about how Russians were running Facebook ads in our elections. But the left is running propaganda against Netanyahu. And other Middle Eastern countries are running propaganda against Netanyahu. And it just begs the question, what do the actual citizens of Israel think?
Well, we'll find out later this
week. We'll find out, but Netanyahu's won various elections. So it's not as if he's a nobody and nobody likes him in Israel. I mean, he's been prime minister for years now.
Yeah, longest serving prime minister I think they've ever had. He's trying to bolster his chances by saying things like he's going to annex parts of the West Bank. I think we talked about that maybe last Thursday. He's going to annex parts of the West Bank if he's elected, which puts more territory in the Israeli map. But to your point, Walker, President Trump has actually kind of surreptitiously been helping him. He announced on Saturday that he had spoken with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about a possible mutual defense treaty between America and Israel. And that is a popular notion within Israel. And I'm sure that the president hopes that that's going to bolster his chances.
When is the election this week? You said later this week?
It is. And I'm trying to think Tuesday.
Tuesday. Tomorrow?
Yes. Election's tomorrow.
All right.
And they say that he's vulnerable.
Yes. That's been my understanding.
Fascinating to see what an Israeli government led by the opposition would look like. Because it's not left-right like here. I think everybody, even the both parties agree that that Israel is in a precarious place. They want U.S. aid. But
it's probably a matter of how aggressive the leaders would be.
Could be.
Probably the opposing party might not be as aggressive military-wise, et cetera, as Netanyahu. But Netanyahu, he's not afraid to offend.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's why some people like him.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this, that Benjamin Netanyahu and the nation of Israel has had a true friend in President Trump and the Trump administration.
Indeed.
So that has been hugely of great importance to that nation, as they are not totally surrounded by enemies. I mean, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, to some extent, they are not, like vultures waiting on Israel.
They have been.
No, I understand. But I'm saying it's not like with Syria, and you have Iran and some of those nations that want its destruction.
Yeah. So. But if war broke out, I'd be very interested to see which side some of those countries picked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of that would depend on the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them want to go to war with the U.S.
Mm-hmm. No. So, and that's what that mutual defense treaty would kind of assure. And speaking of the Middle East, you guys talked about the drone attack on the Saudi oil field.
Yes.
Well, kind of breaking, President Trump is starting to hint that it could be Iran that's behind it. At least they staged this attack. He tweeted out, remember when Iran shot down a drone saying knowingly that it was in their airspace when in fact it was nowhere close? They struck strongly to that story, knowing it was a big lie. Now they say that they had nothing to do with the attack on Saudi Arabia. We'll see. And so the president has not quite named them outright, but he is hinting. And remember, he's the one that said the U.S. is locked and loaded.
Right.
Those are fighting words.
Yes, and Iran, in response, has said we're ready to go to war with the U.S. and anyone else. So it's obviously heating up. Rhetoric is heating up.
Yeah.
We do have the assets in the area, that part of the world, that could deal some damage. Iran's no paper tiger. They could do some serious damage throughout the Middle East and even with some of our forces. So, but they're a bad actor. I mean, they really are. Was President Bush, remember, that called them part of the Axis
of
evil?
Yeah.
You know, I don't always agree with Mitt Romney, especially when he tries to bash President Trump. But this morning he put out a tweet. This is Senator Mitt Romney of Utah. He said, direct engagement by U.S. military in response to Iran's attacks on Saudi oil infrastructure would be a grave mistake. The U.S. has continued arms sales so Saudi Arabia can defend itself. If Saudi Arabia responds against Iran attacks, the U.S. should be ready to support in a non-kinetic role. But I would agree with that, because I don't think it's the U.S.'s responsibility to directly attack Iran if they're responsible. I think Saudi Arabia should do that if they so choose. I don't know if that's the best thing to do. We're not in Saudi Arabia, but President Trump has been very hesitant to get involved in military conflicts, and I think that's for good reason.
I think, and he has been, and I think I agree with you, it's for good reason. Where this does kind of, the Venn diagram kind of puts the U.S. in this sphere, as it were, is that the attack on the Saudi oil fields was meant to cripple the economy of not only Saudi Arabia, but the world. And being that many people are saying that the United States, while still having a very strong economy, is not immune to a rollback of that economy, it kind of puts us, this does affect us. And I know President Trump released some strategic oil reserves to kind of moderate the fluctuation in oil prices globally and everything. The other thing about Saudi Arabia is it is such a remember, Saudi Arabia is where the 9/11 hijackers came from.
Right.
And we went into Iraq because of the alleged weapons of mass destruction. Iran is behind the exportation of terrorism. We have a whole lot of stuff that we have legitimately against them. But there is some stuff, unfinished business with Saudi Arabia. It's just that they are such a strategic partner in the area. Blowing them up figuratively could blow up the whole region literally. So it's just a very sensitive thing.
Well, the point that Walker's making, I tend to agree with that perspective. I do like the fact that we have at least a couple of aircraft carrier groups in the area. We do have assets in the Arabian Sea, somewhere in there too. I think maybe the Indian Sea, if there's an island. What is that? Diego Garcia?
Diego Suarez.
Okay.
We also have assets in Kuwait.
Yeah.
Huge
so,
air base there.
So I think we do have the capability of helping out. But I like the idea of Saudi Arabia responding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do sell them an awful lot. And if they're gonna attack Saudi Arabia, if Iran turns out to be the perpetrator or behind it, then bloody their nose.
Yeah.
And but, you know, then again, on Steve's point there, Iran has threatened to really ruin the world economy by shutting down the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, right.
And that's why they've been, you know, basically taking a couple of oil tankers here and there to show that they can to do that. And
right.
I'm not sure anyone else has the capacity to keep that strait open other than the United States.
Yeah, but, and I'm good with being a strategic leader. I think that's good for the U.S. But, you know, I think President Trump's been good at surprisingly, at getting coalitions together and getting other countries to do their part. And so that kind of lightens the burden on us.
And there are other countries in the Middle East that depend on oil from Saudi Arabia. And so you just tell them, like he did with NATO. He said, listen, you know, ante up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you this is affecting your country too, so you want to punish Iran, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, we got your back.
Yeah. All right.
Walker, I wanted to talk to you about this. We have information now that Michael Horowitz's IG report has been submitted to the Justice Department for review, where they're going
This is the second volume?
Well, no, this is the first volume was actually the first report he had out a little while ago was specifically about Andrew McCabe and his role.
And Comey. And
this we hear, and of course, I don't know how much we can say about it because we haven't seen it, but we hear this is more general about the beginning of the Russia investigation, the FISA warrants, and all this kind of stuff. And I know, Walker,
it implicates the same people.
You're close to this. What do you think is in this report, and is this going to be a bombshell when it hits?
Well, we know here are some things we know for sure. Well, according to reporting, that the prosecutor for the District of Columbia is moving forward with an indictment of Andrew McCabe. That's a grand. They're convening a grand jury. That was reported late last week because Andrew McCabe sent an emergency appeal to the DOJ and the prosecutor's office in D.C. saying, "Please don't prosecute me," and here's why.
Right.
And that letter became public by Andrew McCabe's lawyers. So that's pending, and that doesn't have to do necessarily with the FISA abuses, but it goes back to Andrew McCabe lying under oath minimum of three times. So that's separate than this. But if they're looking at charging McCabe for lying under oath three times and probably charging Comey also, or at least indicting, then this is likely to bring similar repercussions because we had several people sign off on a warrant to the FISA court with faulty foundation.
Okay, so if that's the case, what names that we haven't seen in this first McCabe thing are we likely to see pop up in here?
Well, now you're getting into the DOJ people. You're implicating the DOJ separate than the FBI, because in order to get a FISA warrant, you have to get a signature from a boss at the DOJ, whether it be the Attorney General or the Deputy Attorney General. So you have several people signed, at least four DOJ officials signed these FISA warrants. You have, I may not be able to remember them all, Sally Yates, the one who defied Trump on the travel ban. She said, we're not going to defend it in court. She was fired that day. Sally Yates signed one FISA warrant that had faulty information, and the FBI knew the information was faulty. They admitted it before they even submitted the FISA warrant. You had Rosenstein signed.
Rod Rosenstein, right.
And then I believe one or two others at some point signed these warrants.
Would it go as high as Attorney General Holder?
I don't think his name's on these. So it may be a stain on his legacy, that he has a legacy. But I don't think he's been implicated legally yet.
And then, of course, the FBI, Strzok and Page have fingerprints all over this as well.
Yeah, they're the ones who put the warrants together. So, yeah, they would be implicated in this.
Stay tuned. We'll be all over this.
Yeah, no, this is going to be high drama in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Getting a grand jury convened, that in of itself, for Andrew McCabe, is a huge victory for law and order, because that is unheard of. The DOJ, the FBI, or the prosecutor, rather, convening a grand jury to charge a former FBI deputy director.
And I'll tell you something else. It's got big names in D.C., whoever they are, shaking in their boots, because obviously this is going to go places. And that's when you have people start to say, okay, listen, I know you're coming after me. I want to talk. And I've got some names, and I've got some things you need to see. That's when this really gets interesting.
Fascinating.
All right, what else you got?
Foreign affairs. Kim Jong-un might be the boy prince dictator of North Korea, but he is not unaware of the goings-on in Washington. So you know that last week, President Trump fired John Bolton, his former director of national intelligence,
national security advisor.
Well, Kim Jong-un did not like Bolton. In fact, Kim Jong-un described Bolton at one time as a warmonger and a defective human product. So Bolton gets fired, and what shows up on President Trump's desk? A letter from Kim Jong-un saying, hey, why don't you come on over to North Korea? We can resume these talks.
Interesting.
This guy, I don't know what to make of him, Kim Jong-un. Like you said, I don't know whether he's just crafty like a fox or if this guy's a joke, but with some serious military power at his disposal, I just don't know what to make of him. And I got to say, I don't like the idea of our president going over there. This guy, what if he is a whack job? And he says, hey, you know what? We're holding him. we're keeping the president. Who knows what this guy would do? And that's the problem I have. I wish that they could meet in a secure location that's
like Singapore
or some other place where he doesn't hold all the cards.
If this were a Democrat, conservatives would be blasting him for calling Kim Jong-un a good guy. He loves his people.
He kills his people.
I mean, Trump, come on now. You're smarter than that.
Yeah.
This guy's a freaking dictator.
I don't think that Trump believes that.
No,
I think
but he likes to flirt around with these foreign leaders as if they're like his bro. And they're not. They're killers. They're murderers. And we've been trying to get, rather unsuccessfully, trying to get these dictators to give up their nuclear weapons or their technology that they're using to develop nuclear weapons, and they never do. I mean, now they're firing missiles back into the ocean.
Yeah.
So, to me, don't meet with him unless you're going to cut a deal. Unless you're going to cut a deal, and it's a serious deal that has terms, and everybody's on board, and they sign it, and the terms are public, which he hasn't been making the terms public, then just don't even mess with it.
Yeah, and do it. He would need to do it, since Kim Jong-un, obviously, he's all about saving face. Do this back channel and say, listen, this is your last chance. We either come out of this with a deal, or this is the last time we're talking.
Yeah.
And we're just going to freeze you out. And
like Iran.
Yeah, like Iran. And mm-hmm. and that's the way we do that behind the scenes, and just let Kim Jong-un know no more playing games. Because this is like, to me, this is all gamesmanship.
Yeah.
And he winds up playing us for patsies.
Full mm-hmm. disclosure, I have to say that the State Department, neither the State Department nor President Trump has commented on whether they're taking the letter seriously. So he's not going at this point.
Yeah.
But he was invited. I thought that was interesting. Let's talk about the biggest, baddest bully that we know of. I got to tell you, this story floored me because I didn't know that Joe Biden had this in him. Joe Biden is ready to stand up to anybody. This is in 2017. I want to play you. It's about a minute and a half or so. So let's play it now. I want you to hear this story, and then
This is from 2017.
From 2017, but this is the presidential nominee. If he gets the president, tell me what he would do with Kim Jong-un.
This was the diving board area, and I was one of the guards. And Corn Pop was a bad dude.
Corn Pop.
And he ran a bunch of bad boys. And I did. And back in those days, to show how things have changed, one of the things you had to use, if you used pomade in your hair, you had to wear a bathing cap. And so he was up on the board, wouldn't listen to me. I said, hey, Esther, you, off the board, or I'll come up and drag you off.
Oh, he's
well, he
tough.
Came off, and he said, I'll meet you outside. My car, this was mostly, these were all public housing behind it. My car, there was a gate out here. I parked my car outside the gate. And he said, I'll be waiting for you. He was waiting for three guys in straight razors. Not a joke. There was a guy named Bill Wright, Mouse, the only white guy, and he did all the pools. He was the mechanic. And I said, what am I going to do? He said, come down here in the basement where mechanics, where all the pool filter is. You know, the chain, there used to be a chain that went across the deep end. And he cut off a 6-foot length of chain. He folded up. He said, you walk out with that chain. And you walk to the car and say, you may cut me, man, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head.
He is one tough guy.
I said, you kidding me? He said, no, if you don't come back. And he was right. So I walked out with the chain, and I walked up to my car, and they had, in those days, you used to remember the straight razors, you'd bang them on the curb, get them rusty, put them in a rain barrel, get them rusty.
Really dangerous stuff.
And I looked at them, but I was smart then. I said, first of all, I said, when I tell you get off the board, you get off the board, and I'll kick you out again, but I shouldn't have called you, Esther Williams. I apologize for that. He said, you apologize to me? He said, okay, close the straight razor, and my heart began to beat again.
So what we know is that if he got into, as president, got into a tiff with Putin, that he would apologize if necessary, but he's ready to wrap a chain around
their
head.
I hope he gets the nomination, because I want to hear more grandpa stories leading into 2020.
That was ridiculous. We talked about it in our story meeting, and I went and found it. It's easy to find.
It's hilarious.
And watched it, and...
You found
so many cringe,
it to you, by
cringe.
The way.
Yes, okay, that was it. Thank you. So many cringeworthy moments in that minute and a half.
Corn Pop.
Corn Pop.
And let me tell you something. When I was growing up, I messed with Toucan Sam, Fruit Loops. Remember?
Yeah.
Tony the Tiger, one of my guys.
Did you use a chain?
I'm just Tony the Tiger.
I'm just like Corn Pop, but I'm a little nicer. I'm Sugar Pop.
Sugar Pop. All right, folks. Listen, that's a good way to end the program. More great programming directly ahead. On the American Family Radio Network, Lord willing, we will see you tomorrow for more of today's issues. Bye for now.
Older generations